morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I'm Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive myths associated with religion and politics, patriotism and the media, with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is occurring behind the headlines while predicting how these events will shape our world. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His is the lone credible and reliable voice in an exceedingly dishonest and duplicitous world. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in this discussion over the next 2 hours is 877-300-7645. The commercial again played in the middle of SRN's news. It says, Christian Mingle, find God's match for you. It is my duty, speaking on behalf of the Almighty, that he did not create the software company. He is not engaged with the software company. If you believe that you can use a software tool, a private business, to have God somehow miraculously change all of the little zeros and ones in the Christian Mingle database so that God's hand-picked person for you to spend the rest of your life with is suddenly materialized on your computer screen, then, well, it's no wonder that you believe in the religion of Christianity. One myth leads to another. Ralph Reed was mentioned in the news on Friday, and I didn't have the opportunity to comment on him, and that he was mentioned in the news in the second hour. His Christian Coalition, I'd like to just share a little bit about Ralph Reed. I got to know him a number of years ago. When John McCain was a more credible candidate than George W. Bush in the first time that the two met, I got to know John McCain pretty well. Now, I wouldn't give you a nickel for John McCain at the moment. I think he is amongst the most repulsive politicians in Washington, D.C. But at the time, at least compared to the budding candidacy of George W. Bush, who told me explicitly that he wanted to be a wartime president before he was elected to his first term, that was a personal craving. It cost a million people their lives, by the way, an American $6 trillion of their treasure. The fight between the two was actually tilting strongly in the favor of John McCain in that standoff. And then after John McCain won the primaries in the northeastern part of the United States and some of the Midwest primaries, the battleground drew to the area that the Christian Coalition and Ralph Reed have considerable influence through Christian churches. And so during the North Carolina and the South Carolina and the Virginia primaries, Ralph Reed, working with the Christian churches, began to distribute little pamphlets, campaign propaganda that said that the African-American girl that John McCain had adopted was not really adopted. No, she was the love child of a adulterous affair with an African-American secretary, and then went on to slash John McCain's character based upon his infidelity. Nothing that they wrote was true. John McCain adopted the girl because out of the goodness of his heart. I mean, there are some things that there, at least there was a moment in time where John McCain was a decent man. He chose to adopt this girl. Everything that the Christian Coalition smeared him about was wrong. They knew it was wrong at the time, and yet they had no compunction to avoid doing it. Their conscience wasn't bothered the least about lying in this regard, and using church parking lots and the windows of cars in the parking lot to communicate their malfeasance. I thought you ought to know a little bit about the Christian Coalition and its most vibrant political leader, Ralph Reed. The other part of the news today is again troubling, that here's that Republican announcement that they have to appease the Hispanic community to buy votes to prevail. It is probably true that if they're going to prevail, they have to appease the Hispanic community. But even if they were to do so and jump on the wagon and say, yeah, we'll go along and rubber stamp the Democratic amnesty plan, they aren't going to gain any votes. It's already way beyond the time that Republicans have the opportunity to prevail because of the demographics. Sadly, what Hispanics have done is they have voted for the party that, on a single issue, gives them what they think they want, which is free access of Mexicans into the United States, knowing that three times in the past there have been given amnesty to the Mexicans who have come into this country illegally, that the term illegal alien is no longer even spoken, and that that the Welcome Act will continue to be open for Mexicans to come into the United States illegally. That's their dream. And they speak about it as unifying families. Of course, what they're just not thinking is that the Hispanic community does not seem to recognize that by soliciting that which they crave initially, which is the open door policy for Mexicans to come into the United States and to live here with all of the entitlements that are given to U.S. citizens, even if they do not earn them. Very few are earned anyway. The reality is that the party that they're voting for is destroying the very thing that they're seeking. That this Democratic Party that they continue to elect is destroying the very hope of a economic future worth embracing in the United States. They're destroying the very thing that they're seeking. It is the sad thing that happens so often in politics, where a community votes almost unanimously for one party versus another on a single ground, and they're actually working against the very thing that they covet the most. There was a statement in the news also about Putin. It is a sad day when the dark-hearted one from KGB and an old the old USSR is more sane than the President of the United States, but this is the case. Putin's comments in Great Britain with Cameron signaled a clear disapproval of the U.S. plan to increase military support to the Syrian rebels. And his warning came just one day before he's to meet U.S. President Barack Hussein Obama for talks at the Group of Eight summit in Northern Ireland. He said, "I believe, and you should not deny, that one should hardly back those who kill their enemies and eat their organs. Do you want to support these people? Do you want to supply arms to these people?" Putin asked, speaking to reporters in London after meeting with British Prime Minister David Cameron. Now, there are a million reasons not to support the rebels, and the fact that they are suicide bombers, the fact that they are raping women by the tens of thousands, that they are torturing children, that they are inflicting much of their carnage on civilians and doing so deliberately, the fact that they are fundamentalist Muslims, and that if they are empowered, the Christian community there in Syria will be annihilated. The fact that if they prevail, then Syria will be far greater a threat to the world than it is currently. But here you have the leader of Russia, a man with a very dark, dark soul, once again making more sense than the American leadership. Over the past few days, we have been covering a story that is just astonishing to me. We're going to probably spend two more days on it. It's the story of where Dianne Feinstein, of the head of the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee, which would be probably the most powerful position, the most in-the-know position amongst Washington politicians. So there's nothing that I'm going to share with you that Dianne Feinstein does not know. And yet, to defend the total and complete breach of the U.S. Constitution on search and seizure, Dianne Feinstein listed David Headley as an example of someone who was caught in the net associated with the collection of information regarding cell phone use, and that he was plotting in America the same kind of scheme that he helped enable in Mumbai, which killed Well, about 160 some odd individuals. So she was justifying the surveillance of Americans, this broad net, based upon the capture of this one individual, David Headley, and associating his Mumbai involvement with something that may have happened in the United States had the United States not been snooping with this broad net. Now, the reason this story is so important is manyfold, one of which is that David Headley was employed by the ISI, which is Pakistani's version of the CIA and FBI and military intelligence all rolled into one. And as an employee, as an agent of, as a paid individual of the ISI, as an individual trained and directed by the ISI, he did the groundwork for the Mumbai attacks in India that killed so many people. Now, the reason that that is incriminating is the United States, since 2001, has sent the Pakistani government and thus their ISI $20 billion in U.S. aid. $9 billion of that is said to be reimbursement for supporting the U.S. military operations. And so Dianne Feinstein in the Senate, which is responsible for the approval of American foreign aid, and as the head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, knowingly, deliberately provided some $20 billion to the organization most responsible for Islamic terrorist attacks worldwide. And yet, rather than disclosing that she knew that she was funding and abetting terror worldwide by sending $20 billion to the ISI, which was actually the motivation behind and the money behind and the training behind and the inspiration behind the Mumbai attacks, she touts the arrest of one of their foot soldiers as the great triumph of snooping on Americans. Did she not think that any American would bother to trace the history of David Headley and to consider how he was actually apprehended and what the U.S. government knew about him? Oh, there is so much more to this story, and we will continue to detail it, because Dianne Feinstein doesn't want you to know it. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. We'll be back in a moment. I want to pick up the story of Lashkar-e-Taiba, their association with Pakistan's government through the ISI, and the tie to the United States of one of their soldiers named David Headley. I'm going to begin where we ended our last comment on the information that can be gleaned in a matter of seconds regarding this ban and the attacks. According to radio transmissions picked up by Indian intelligence, the attackers were told by their handlers in Pakistan, that would be the ISI, that the lives of Jews were worth 50 times more than non-Jews. Injuries reported on the bodies of Jews indicate that they were tortured. The reason that this is germane is that if it was a politically motivated attack by Pakistan's ISI to go after their enemy, India, then killing Indian military personnel, Indian political personnel, would have been the most desirable targets. But when Jews, who have absolutely no influence in India, are the targets, what it says is the motivation of the ISI is Islam. That the Pakistani ISI is an Islamic-motivated institution. Because in Islam, the greatest enemy, according to the Quran, are Jews. And then second only to Jews are Christians. The Mumbai attacks were planned and directed by Lashkar-e-Taiba militants inside of Pakistan and carried out by 10 young armed men trained and sent to Mumbai and directed from inside Pakistan via mobile phones and voice over internet protocol. You should know that Lashkar-e-Taiba was the terrorist wing of a Pakistani-based Islamic religious party, the Maqaz-ud-Dawah Wal-Ishad. The MDI is an Islamic party that initially came to being based upon their anti-missionary work, that any Christian that was found in an Islamic country, particularly in Pakistan, by the way, the name means Army of the Righteous and Pure. That's what Lashkar-e-Taiba means, Army of the Righteous and Pure. Pakistan, by the way, is the land of the pure, meaning pure Islam, is one of the largest terrorist training organizations in Pakistan. They are specifically effective at murdering Hindus, Christians, and communists, as well as peaceful Muslims in Kashmir. They were deployed beginning in 1994 aggressively by the Pakistani ISI for the express purpose of forcing Kashmir into being annexed into Pakistan. And so, beginning 1994, in that period, what you find is a direct application of Lashkar-e-Taiba supporting the Pakistani governments and the ISI's mission into forcing the annexation of Kashmir into Pakistan. Now, this we're going to continue what can be easily gleaned about the unbelievable hypocrisy that came out of Senator Dianne Feinstein's statement. In July 2009, Pakistani authorities confirmed that the LAT, Lashkar-e-Taiba, plotted and financed the attacks from their camps in Karachi, Pakistan. Now, what's troubling about that, if you're an American paying for the Pakistani training of these terrorists, is that the Pakistani government, prior to that time, said that it shut down, made illegal LAT and the LAT training camps, and yet they were fully operational years after the Pakistani government said that they shut them down. In November 2009, Pakistani authorities charged seven men with aiding and abetting that plot. Of course, they held a parade for them the following day. Mumbai police, this is in India, originally identified 37 suspects, including two Pakistani army officers, for their involvement in the plot that left 166 Indians dead. All but two of the suspects were Pakistani. You see, one of the two that was not Pakistani was Mr. David Headley. He was born in America, so he is an American. They say that he is a Pakistani American because his father, not his mother, was a Pakistani, although his father at the time was working for the Voice of America and was working in the Pakistani embassy in Washington, D.C. So we learned that it is an American, David Headley, who was one of the co-conspirators of the Mumbai attacks. We will return to Shattering Myths in a moment and consider what was known about David Headley and how America first came to know that he was an Islamic terrorist. Before we return to this story about David Headley and the malfeasance, the explicit dishonesty of the head of the U.S. Intelligence Subcommittee in the U.S. Senate, Dianne Feinstein. Since there is so much chatter about the newly elected, which is called centrist, moderate in Iran, I think I need to at least state a couple of things. When a Muslim cleric is elected, he is no moderate. He is no centrist. He is no peacemaker. To be an Islamic cleric, one has to be a good Muslim. According to the Quran, any Muslim who is a peacemaker, any Muslim who is moderate, ceases to be a Muslim. The Ninth Surah calls them hypocrites and tells good Muslims, which would be jihadists, to kill them so that Allah can torture them in hell. All you have to do is read the Quran. You don't even have to get past the Ninth Surah to understand that there can never be, and will never be, a peaceful Islamic cleric. Ever. Second, this man's past was engaged explicitly in defending Iran's right to build a nuclear bomb. That was his job prior to winning this election. He was explicitly involved in lying on behalf of the Iranian government, on behalf of the development of that bomb, to give cover for the Islamic government of Iran so that it could complete its bomb and use it on Israel and the United States. This is who the press is saying is a moderate. Oh, boy. The people have spoken. There is hope again in Iran. You know, that was the voice going back 10 years ago. And I continue to say it isn't true. So this new Iran's, CNN's report, Iran's centrist president-elect expressed his willingness to open dialogue with the United States. Oh, boy, proof. Yeah, what does he want? He said, oh, yeah, I'll open dialogue with the United States so long as the United States stops bullying Iran, which means removes all sanctions, and publicly recognizes Iran's right to be a nuclear country, which means we ain't developing nuclear technology to boil water. We want to be a nuclear country, which means we possess nuclear bombs. That's his first statement to the United States. It is astonishing, though, that those in the media will continue to tout lies, feed the masses poison, so that almost no one is able to think clearly. Returning now to the David Headley story, remember now, he was arrested in 2009, and he was arrested in 2009 not because of Snoopgate. This had nothing to do, zero to do, with the imposition of unreasonable search and seizure on Americans' lives through internet and telephone surveillance, as Dianne Feinstein would have you believe. No, as a matter of fact, what we're going to find out is that today, to two of David Headley's wives, after he beat them to the point of almost death, went to the FBI and said explicitly that Mr. David Headley was an Islamic terrorist, that he was employed by the ISI and Lashkar-e-Taiba, and that he was purposefully, deliberately going back and forth between Pakistan and India for the express purpose of instigating a terrorist attack on India. We knew that in 2005, and we didn't bother to tell the Indians. Dianne Feinstein knew it in 2005, and she didn't bother to tell the American people. An Indian report summarizing intelligence gained from India's interrogation of David Headley, which was conducted in 2009, was released in October of 2010. The United States finally gave India the right to question the surviving member of the team that was the not actually on the ground at the time, but the guy that spent the most time preparing for the attack on Mumbai, rather than extraditing him to India, which is the thing that any nation would have done if it wasn't for the fact that the United States was up to its eyeballs in malfeasance with David Headley. They simply gave India begrudgingly access to interrogate him under the mandate that the Indian government does not explore David Headley's connections to the United States. Well, they released their interrogation of David Headley in 2010. So this is now public knowledge, and Dianne Feinstein knows it. It said that Pakistan's intelligence agency, the ISI, had provided support for the attacks by providing funding for reconnaissance missions in Mumbai. $25,000 was the last payment, but all of the trips to Mumbai by David Headley from the United States were funded by the Pakistani government, their ISI. The report included David Headley's claim that Lashkar-e-Taiba's chief military commander, Zaki-ur-Rahman Lakhvi, had close ties with the ISI. He said that every big action of the LET is done in close coordination with the Pakistani ISI, their equivalent to the United States military intelligence, CIA, NSA, and FBI all combined. David Headley was a member of Lashkar-e-Taiba between 2002 and 2009, carrying a U.S. passport, by the way. born in the United States. Headley traveled extensively to as part of his work for the LAT. Headley received training in small arms and counter-surveillance from LAT, built a network of connections for the group, and was its chief scout for scoping out targets in the Mumbai attack, having allegedly been given $25,000 in cash in 2006 by an ISA officer known as Major Iqbal. Major Iqbal, they all use code names, but this aspect of his connection with the ISI has been proven not only by the United States, but by India. The officer of the ISI, the major, also helped him arrange communications systems for the attack, oversaw a model of the Taj Mahal Hotel so that gunmen would know their way inside of the target, according to Headley's testimony to Indian authorities. Headley also helped ISI recruit Indian agents to monitor Indian troop movements, according to a U.S. official. At the same time, Headley was also an informant for the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. Yes, he was an informant because he got caught twice dealing drugs, not just dealing drugs, importing drugs. The second time as a importing heroin from Pakistan. And Headley's wives warned officials of the U.S. government of Headley's involvement with the LAT and his plotting attacks, warning specifically that the Taj Mahal Hotel was one of his and their targets. They did this in 2005 and 2007, 3 years and 1 year before the attack, giving the United States government explicit information as to what this guy was going to do. And the U.S. government did not convey that to the American people and continue to fund the Pakistani ISI, did not give that information to the Indians. It's very much, in fact, it's actually much worse than the situation with 9/11, where the U.S. government, its FBI, learned directly of the 9/11 attack back 4 years before the attack took place, with every detail of the attack itemized in the Philippines by Ramzi Youssef before the attack actually occurred. Same thing is true here. The only difference here is that rather than getting it off of the terrorist's computer himself, which the FBI easily could have done after the information from the wives, they got it from the wives. And the reason the wives went to the FBI is they were beaten to the point of near death by this good Muslim. U.S. officials also concluded that the Inter-Services Intelligence, the ISI officers, provided direct support to Lashkar-e-Taiba militants who carried out the attacks. Dianne Feinstein is therefore aware of that, and yet her hands are covered with the blood of the deaths of those individuals because through the Senate finance, she has authorized $20 billion in aids for the Pakistani government and their ISI. David Headley's disclosures that three Pakistani army officers were associated with the planning and execution of the attack were substantiated by Ansari's revelations during his interrogation. Ansari is the fellow that was actually captured alive. He said exactly the same thing. Their stories, even though they were interrogated a world apart, say exactly the same thing. Now, you should know that it's interesting anyway that the blood tests on the attackers of Mumbai said they all had serious amounts of cocaine and LSD in their veins, that they had injected themselves to stay awake for 50 hours, and they found these syringes at the scenes of the attack. It wasn't just enough to be drugged by Islam, they were also drugged by cocaine and LSD. It's also interesting that the attackers had used Google Earth to familiarize themselves with the buildings used in the attack. They didn't have to snoop out the old-fashioned way. In October of 2009, two Chicago men were arrested and charged by the FBI for involvement of terrorism abroad. One was David Headley, and the other was Rana. Headley, a Pakistani-American, now he's just an American. He was born here in America. His father was a Pakistani, but living legally in the United States, working in the United States. His mother was not. was charged in November 2009 with scouting for those locations for the 2008 Mumbai attacks. Headley reported to have posed as an American Jew during his scouting missions. On March of 2010, Headley pled guilty to a dozen charges against him, therefore avoiding going to trial. All of these guys avoid going to trial because the United States government doesn't want to try them. It's just like the case with Osama bin Laden. They sent in that team to kill him. It would have been easy to capture him alive. Easy. No more difficult. As a matter of fact, as you look at how that mission played out, he was unarmed in his pajamas, sleeping, and had just awoken up. He didn't have a firearm within reach, and they chose to blow his brains out as opposed to capture him. Would have been just as easy to capture him. And yet the United States didn't want him tried. And the reason they don't want him tried is because of what would be revealed and how incriminating it would be to the U.S. government. Well, Mr. Headley was not born David Headley. That was his mother's maiden name. He was born Daoud Sayed Gilani, June 30th, 1960. He was born in the United States. And later moved to Chicago, and we will track more of this man's history because it's germane in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yetta. We're tracking the whereabouts of one David Headley, and that his association with Pakistani's ISI, with the Mumbai terrorist attacks, and with the U.S. government, make the comments that Dianne Feinstein made, the senator, head of the Senate Intelligence Committee, made regarding the justification for Snoopgate, incredibly hypocritical, to the point that somewhere along the lines, when information is provided to Americans that shows that their government is not trustworthy, that their government is actually working against them, that their government is funding their enemies, purposefully, deliberately destroying America, that somewhere along the way, people are going to stop singing the national anthem, are going to stop saluting the flag, are going to stop voting in elections, are going to stop being patriotic. This is one of those times. Between 2002 and 2005, Headley made several trips to Pakistan for terrorist training while simultaneously working as an informant for the United States, knowingly in the Drug Enforcement Agent Administration, which is the DEA. I suspect, and so does the Indian government, that he was also employed by the CIA. During 2006 and 2008, Headley performed 5 spying missions in Mumbai. At the time that he was employed by the Drug Enforcement Administration, at the time that one of his wives, who had been beaten by him, told the U.S. government that, by the way, the reason he's going there is he's plotting a terrorist attack. He was there for the 2008 attacks on behalf of Lashkar-e-Taiba and the Pakistani ex-military officers that the attacks killed 168 people in 2009. Headley traveled to Britain to help plan the attack also against the Danish newspaper that had published cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. He was arrested in 2009 at O'Hare Airport, not because of Spygate, not because his wives had revealed that this is what he was doing. No, he was arrested because the Indian government said that this is what this man has done. The Indian government's investigation had rooted him out, as well as the Danish government as it relates to the attack on the newspaper. Since his arrest and guilty plea, Headley has been cooperating with the U.S. and Indian authorities, and he has given them much information, it says. The public in India has followed Headley's case closely, as it was the latest discovery in the unfolding saga of the 2008 Mumbai attacks. U.S. authorities begrudgingly gave Indian investigators direct access to Headley, only in the United States, in an American prison. But many in India have questioned why the United States has not shared what they knew about him with the Indian authorities when they knew that he was plotting this terrorist attack in advance of the terrorist attack. In the trial of Rana, Headley provided detailed information about the participation of Pakistanis in his inner services intelligence, their ISI, in carrying out the Mumbai attacks under oath. Headley, who is an American, born of a Pakistani father, was born Daoud Galani in Washington, D.C. His father worked for the Voice of America. His father was also a diplomat working in the Pakistani embassy in Washington, D.C. For a time, his Maryland-born American mother, Alice Shareel Headley, worked as a secretary in the Pakistani embassy in Washington. That's where she worked at the time of his birth. She was also a socialite, the daughter of Coleman Headley, a former University of Maryland football star. The family in 1960 left the United States and settled in Lahore, but Shareel, the American wife, could not tolerate the culture, it says. She couldn't tolerate Muslims. She and her husband separated in the mid-1960s, and she left her children with him in Pakistan because she had no rights to them once they moved to Pakistan, an Islamic country. Women have no rights in a Pakistani Muslim culture. So after divorcing Daoud's father, his mother, Shareel, she married four more times. She was a bastion of morality. That's why she probably chose the man in the first place. Daoud has a younger sister and a half-brother. The latter, the half-brother, as an adult became a spokesperson for then Prime Minister of Pakistan, Yusuf Razi Guliani. He presently serves as Pakistan's press attaché in Beijing. This family is deeply rooted into the Pakistani government. Dad working in the embassy, mom working in the embassy, and now brother working currently as a minister on behalf of the Pakistani government.